There comes a moment in one's life where you have to choose between life as it could be, life as it was, or life at all. Jane finds herself at the edge of a fatal and towering cliff. Jane looks down at the ledge and the ground far below, one foot moved forward before closing her eyes and bracing herself for death. Two and a half years earlier, a taxi voyaged its way through a winding road neighbored by evergreen woodlands. The somber Washington weather had greeted the car along the way with the delicate patter of raindrops falling all around the land. There sat Jane Eyre, in silence, as neither passenger nor driver spoke. She was in her own world as her fingers smudged into the graphite of her pocket-sized sketchbook. Her eyes would occasionally peek out the window, taking in her surroundings with awe and anxiety. Trepidation swelled inside her when she stepped outside of her artist world. Today she would start a new job in a state she had never set foot in before. Her heart began to palpitate at an unsteady pace. She immediately went back to her drawing, allowing it to completely consume her.
Here, miss.
Jane marveled at the mansion that stood before her. It was situated in a private lot with sleek and modern architecture, the building encircled by the evergreen trees. Even in its grandeur, there was a darkness about it against the gray sky. An unsettling impression came over her as she took it in. Chills quivered down her neck. Her eyes shifted away from the building. Eventually, she caught sight of a man in a wrinkled gray suit standing in the driveway. He held hands with an adorable little girl who couldn't have been older than 5 or 6, wearing a bright red raincoat and matching rain boots. Jane smiled at the girl from the door of the cab.
Thank you.
You must be Jane Eyre.
Without hesitation, the man made his way to the trunk of the taxi. Jane observed the worried look in the man's eyes amongst an expressionless face. Despite looking to be in his 30s, patches of gray hair were scattered through his dark locks. He signaled for the taxi driver to open the trunk, not having time to wait for the driver to come out and grab the luggage. Jane wondered if greeting and hiring new nannies was a common occurrence for him.
Is this all you got?
I'm afraid it is.
Thank you for getting her here.
She eyed the little girl, who was actively avoiding eye contact with Jane.
How was the ride up here?
It was good.
The young girl eyed Jane up and down, trying to discern her feelings about the new nanny. Jane noticed this and immediately softened her eyes and gave a warm smile to the girl.
Jane, this is Adele.
It's nice to meet you, Adele. You remind me of a ladybug in that coat of yours.
I'm not a bug. I'm a girl. And only grown-ups call me Adele.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You can call me Addie.
Come on in.
Your daughter is so sassy.
Oh, she's not mine.
I'm sorry, I just thought...
It's all right, I'm just thoughtless.
The front room was opulent. Numerous windows to expose what light there was. Or, rather, a cloudy atmosphere and the raindrops clinging to the windows in place of sun streaming through them. Jane felt out of place in this space. It was far nicer than any other house she had been in.
Welcome to your new place of employment.
I'm sorry, but, if you aren't her father, then who is?
Edward Rochester. He's gone on business at the moment and probably won't return for a couple of weeks.
And, who are you then?
Oh, I'm Briggs.
And...
Come on, let's go upstairs.
Okay.
Jane couldn't help but notice every inch of the house. It was so clean and pristine, but somehow empty and hollow-feeling. As her eyes caught the top of the stairs, she noticed Addie standing there, an impatient look in her eye.
Come on!
The feeling of being in a new place brought an overwhelming nostalgia to Jane, and she found her mind caught in a memory. It was 7 years earlier, and she was 12 years old, sitting at a desk across from her new headmistress, a woman with kind eyes and a gentle spirit. Miss Temple examined Jane, determining what to do with her newest student, who was not only dressed poorly, but also seemed unbelievably downtrodden.
Let me show you to your room.
At the Rochester estate, Jane found herself out of the memory and entered Addie's room, where the girl was standing in the center, a smile on her face as she presented the palatial room to Jane.
This is my bed. I picked it out myself.
Oh, wow. It's really lovely. Is pink your favorite color?
No, it used to be, but now it's teal.
And what was it yesterday?
Clear.
She always changes her mind.
Miss Temple showed Jane into a small room, packed with three finely made bunks, and one bunk bare of anything but white bedding that was stained yellow. Miss Temple motioned to the stained bunk.
It looks like this one's yours, Jane. It's a little sad now, but you could always make it your own. Did your aunt get you some bedding before you came?
No.
Oh, that's okay. I will see what we can do. We can at least get you something that's not stained.
Thank you.
Continuing his tour of the house, Briggs opened the door to a new bedroom.
And this is your room, Jane.
The room was a cozy one, with a queen-sized bed and clean green bedding. Simple furniture adorned the room. A window seat lay cradled near the window, a large bookshelf next to it. Despite the room seeming plain, Jane stared at it in awe. Briggs continued on as if he didn't notice her reaction.
There's a whole slew of other bedrooms in this place, but this one's the closest to Adele. Something about it just seemed to suit you.
It's perfect.
The first day she was at Lowood School, Jane sat alone in her stained bed, unpacking her small duffel bag. There were only three shirts and a few other things nestled in the bag. She folded each of them gently before standing up to place them in her little dresser drawer by the bed. The clothes didn't even take up a fourth of the drawer.
Did you see how Gregory was looking at you?
I didn't. Was it like a good look?
Girl, he has to like you. He is so cute. You're so lucky.
Do you think he'll ask you to be his girlfriend?
The girls didn't seem to notice Jane as each of them dropped their backpacks onto their respective beds. As the girls promptly exited the room, one of them turned to look at Jane and waved at her sweetly before leaving the room with her friends. Jane would later discover that this girl's name was Helen.
That's the kitchen. Doesn't get used too much right now.
And then you add a little cinnamon. Oh no, way too much.
All over the kitchen floor.
Hurry, let's clean it up.
This is the game room. And in here is the home theater.
Isn't Michael Fassbender just so perfect?
Oh, absolutely.
In there is the gym, and down there...
Just past the gym was a dark hallway, a door at the end of it that caught Jane dead in her tracks.
That's Edward's personal gallery. You know, very valuable objects are held down that way, and under heavy security. So, I wouldn't recommend going down there unless you want every cop in Seattle to show up.
Jane found herself gazing down at the door as it seemed to call to her.
They say the place is haunted, you know.
Briggs broke Jane from her trance. He gave her a serious look as she stared at him, face white. He turned from Jane and tossed a teasing smile in Addie's direction. It was a joke. Jane followed after them as they continued to move through the house, distant.
Well, I have to be off.
He handed Jane a crumpled business card out of his pant pocket. It read, Briggs Morrison Law Group, LLP.
If you ever need anything and can't reach me on my cell phone, you can reach me at my office.
Thank you.
Bye, Adele.
Bye, Briggy.
Really, Jane, if you need anything, just call.
I will.
I'll see you both later.
Hi, this is Helen. Sorry I missed you. I'll be sure to call you back as soon as I can. Thanks. Bye.
Hey, Helen. You never guess where I am and what I'm doing. So I may or may not be in my new bedroom, and I may or may not finally have a queen-size mattress. But I wouldn't dare flex any of that on you with your sad twin-size college dorm room bed. Well, I'm sure you already guessed it, but I started my new job. And it just all happened so fast, and it's just crazy that just a week ago I was interviewed and then now I'm here. Oh my gosh. Anyways, the guy that interviewed me, I guess he isn't even really the dad. He's the lawyer. I don't know how that works, but yes, the dad's lawyer interviewed me for this job, and I don't know what the dad does. Hopefully nothing illegal. Anyways, the little girl I'm watching, Addie, she's so cute, very sassy. I just don't think she really expects me to hang around long. I just don't know why her last nanny left. It seems like they're like tried to quickly hire someone, and I don't know. I wasn't given much details about anything really. And you know, I don't know anything about the family, the house. All I know is that they're rich. I don't know how I ended up here. I just feel like I don't belong. Oh, and I also forgot they have a dog named Pilot. I'm sorry, this is such a long message. It's probably going to cut off soon, but I hope I can make this work. And I just wanted to let you know what's happening and let you know I miss you. Anyways, I'll talk to you later. Bye.
The aroma that came from the kitchen was too tantalizing to ignore. Both Addie and Pilot watched Jane cook. Jane was in her element, joy overflowing in being able to provide something and get a chance to get to know Addie better.
What is Ray like?
He cries a lot and always eats carrots for lunch. What are you making?
It's my special hot cocoa.
What makes it so special?
A lot of love and cinnamon.
I don't like cinnamon.
Just try it once. Then, if you don't like it, you won't have to have it again.
Addie reluctantly nodded, still having an uneasy hesitation. Jane began mixing ingredients together, and curiosity piqued Addie's interest as she noticed Jane's sketchbook on the island near where she sat.
Jane, you're an artist?
Jane turned to see Addie looking at her sketches. She quickly hurried over to the girl when she noticed Addie looking at a sketch of a dark, eerie-looking door.
You should never look at an artist's sketchbook without asking them first.
I'm sorry.
It's all right. Here, let me pick some drawings out to show you.
Wow, you drew this?
I did.
You're amazing!
I don't know about that. I have a lot of work to be better.
What's another one? So pretty.
The girl touched the lines of the drawing, fascinated as Jane returned to her project on the stove.
Drawing helps me feel better when I feel sad. Oh, be careful. It's hot.
I'm an artist, too.
Oh, really? What do you draw?
Come on, let me show you.
Jane finally managed to catch up to Addie. She walked in to see the girl standing proudly in front of a wall full of taped-up crayon and colored pencil drawings in a small corner of the room. It was displayed methodically, almost with an intentional purpose.
This is a drawing of a cat named Harold.
Wow, that's great!
One day, I'm going to have a gallery just like Daddy.
Your dad owns a gallery?
Yep, Daddy owns lots and lots and lots of galleries. But I've only been to one of them. Daddy says I'm not old enough to go to the galleries. I wish I was good like you.
You are good. It just takes a lot of practice.
Addie turned around to look at one of her drawings. One of them was a little stick figure family.
Is this your mom?
Yeah, Daddy says she'll be back someday.
A solemn look formed on Jane's face as she saw a lonely little girl looking up at the drawing as if it were a dream, a wish to one day be granted. After a brief pause, Addie took the opportunity to grab a porcelain doll off of her dresser.
Mommy gave me this.
Whoa.
And these stuffed animals.
When did she give these to you?
Oh, Daddy brings me things from Mommy all the time. It's kind of like Santa Claus.
Well, that's nice of her to be thinking of you.
Daddy says I look like Mommy.
Then she must be a lovely lady.
Uh-huh.
Here, it should be cool enough now. I promise you won't hurt my feelings if you don't like it. Well, how is it?
It's so good. I'm glad you're here.
So am I, Addiebug.
Jane walked into the house, sensing its emptiness while Addie was gone at school.
Hi, girl. How are you? Let's go watch a movie in that fancy home theater, shall we? Okay, go find a spot. Pilot? Where'd you go? Pilot? What is it?
Jane found the dog staring down the gloomy hall at the big red door.
Pi, it's okay. It's okay, girl.
Though Jane was able to pull the dog from her trance, Jane couldn't help but feel uneasy. Her gaze was drawn down the hallway to the room, narrowing in on it and becoming consumed by it. The darkness of the room began to cloud around her, beckoning her to it. The red of the door became redder the longer Jane stared at it, its dark crimson color the shade of blood. The paint almost seemed to drip off the door, blood pooling at the bottom, reminding Jane, calling her back to a memory.
You're a liar.
Come on, Pilot. How about we go watch our movie?
Jane motioned the dog into the theater, not daring to look back. A few hours had passed, and Jane returned to pick up Addie from school. Addie's normal smiling face was replaced with a pouty one. Her eyes were red and puffy.
Okay, there you go.
Before Jane had a moment to go back to the driver's seat, she turned and was startled to see a middle-aged woman looking at her, waiting for her.
Hello, are you Adele's nanny?
Yeah?
I'm Adele's teacher, Miss Rawson. May I talk to you, Miss...
Jane Eyre. Is there something wrong?
Adele got into a fight with another student, Kate, and hit her in the stomach.
What would make her do that?
I would prefer to talk to Adele's father about this.
But he's out of town and I'm...
New, right? There's always a new one. I think Adele might be struggling without a constant adult figure in her life. With no mother or father around and this never-ending string of new nannies, it must not be good for her. Nothing against you, Miss Eyre.
No offense taken. I'm just sure that there's no way Addie would hit another student unprovoked.
Well, it happened. I would talk to Mr. Rochester about it if I were you.
Well, thank you for the advice. Are you okay, Bug? Did you have a nice day at school? Well, if you want to talk about it, I'm here. But we can drive in quiet. That's okay, too.
I got in trouble today.
Was it because of Kate?
She kept on telling everyone that I don't have parents, that you're just my fake mom.
Curled up tight into a ball, the 12-year-old Jane sat, completely clothed, inside an empty, dark shower stall. It was discolored, and she sat facing the corner, desperately trying to fade away.
Sierra said that she overheard the teachers talking about her. I guess she got kicked out of her old school and even her home because she tried to kill someone.
What? Kill someone?
Yeah, like she's extremely dangerous. And if you asked her about it, she wouldn't even tell you the truth because she's a pathological liar.
How did she get accepted here? Shouldn't she be in jail or something?
Dunno, I guess Miss Temple was just being nice. I just wouldn't go anywhere near Jane.
The memories felt so intense that Jane could feel herself squeezing tight onto her wrist, completely overwhelmed until she covered her ears violently with her hands. Tears started pouring down her face. One sound was completely clear.
You've been nothing but a curse.
That's not very nice.
I didn't like what you were saying, but she wouldn't stop.
I'm sure that made you upset.
She kept on saying it, and I had to stop her.
How did you stop her?
I hit her.
Uh-oh.
But she was hurting me. No one will believe me. None of the teachers. No one. Do you believe me, Jane?
Jane, are you okay?
Everyone is saying that all I do is lie. They're saying that I hurt my family and that's why I was sent here.
You didn't. Did you?
No.
Helen noticed one of Jane's long sleeves folded back, faintly exposing cut marks and a band-aid on her wrist. Helen could tell that there was more to Jane than she could ever bear to tell. So she wrapped her arms around her friend and held her tight.
Do you believe me?
Of course I do.
Of course I believe you. It's hard when no one believes you. I'm glad you stood up for yourself, Addie. But we shouldn't hit people to get what we want.
What should I do?
Well, that's a good question.
Upon looking around the room, she noticed that Helen's bed was different too. Instead of a pillowcase to match her cute purple bedding, it had only a white and caseless pillow.
If you don't like it, I understand. I just thought you would like something for your bed.
Thank you.
It's okay now. You're okay here.
Do you want to lick the spoon?
Yeah.
It's a very special recipe.
What are you making these for?
Just for fun.
Oh, well, chocolate cake is for birthdays.
And why's that?
Well, whenever my friends have their birthday parties, it's a chocolate cake.
Well, these are cupcakes.
It's the same thing, Jane.
Nuh-uh, because with cupcakes, you can decorate your own.
I'm gonna put a walrus on mine.
A walrus, huh? That's quite ambitious.
What are you going to put on yours, Jane?
Later that night, Jane sat on the floor of her bedroom holding a small cupcake with a single candle in it, its flame glowing bright. A voicemail recording played.
Happy birthday, dear Jane. Happy birthday to you. Okay, now make a wish, and it better be a good one.
You always make such a big deal about birthday wishes. I just don't know what to wish for.
You know what to wish for. Don't tell me you don't.
You're right.
I'm sorry that I can't be there. I miss you so much. Happy birthday, Jane. I love you. Mwah.
Hello? Ah!
When Jane checked on Addie, she was fast asleep, gripping tightly to a stuffed walrus.
Hello?
Hi, Briggs?
Yeah?
It's Jane. There's this storm and a tree broke a window, and I might be seeing things. I just don't know what to do. What do you...
I'm on my way. It's all clear. No one is here.
I'm so sorry. I know it's late. I just got scared.
No, it's all right. I would have freaked out if a tree broke a window, too.
Would you like some cocoa?
Sure. Thank you. How have you been adjusting? Has Adele been okay for you?
Addie's been wonderful. I'm worried about her, though. She's been getting bullied at school.
About what?
This girl keeps saying she doesn't have a family. That she only has fake moms. I think Addie needs her father. She misses him.
Edward is just... I'm sure he'll be home soon. Whoa, that's pretty good. When is that, Cinnamon?
Yeah.
Well, I've known him for years. He's a good guy. A bit of a handful, but he's just going through a lot.
I understand.
He's just waiting for Celine to come back and raise Adele. Though, I don't ever think that that's happening.
Is Celine Addie's mother?
Yes, but she left Adele with Edward when she was only 2. Haven't heard from her since. No one knows where she is.
Oh.
Don't think poorly of Edward. He just wants the love of his life back.
You're a good friend to him.
He's a good friend to me. I will admit, he can be frustrating. You'll see what I mean when you meet him. But, seriously, how are you doing?
I'm okay. I think this place really is haunted, though.
There's no such thing as ghosts. I was kidding when I said that it was haunted. You know, being cooped up in here probably isn't helping. Have you gone up on any of the hiking trails?
I didn't know there were trails nearby.
Yeah, there's one off the side of the house, actually. Maybe fresh air and Mother Nature will help.
Maybe. Have fun at school, Bug.
Bye, Jane.
See you later.
The dog was nowhere to be seen. Only wind blew through the trees that surrounded the house. Jane looked around for the pup.
Pilot!
As Jane turned back to look at the house, she felt eyes on her. Looking up at the second story, she noticed eyes were on her. A dark figure loomed in the window, staring down at Jane.
No.
Jane had to get out of there. She turned around toward the woods behind the house. Just as Briggs had described, there sat a small trail just off to the side of it, not far from where Jane stood. Without a second look back, she began to run.
No, 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 stop, stop.
Jane rushed through the trees, letting the branches whip past her, scraping and cutting her body. Every few moments, she looked behind her to spot the figure in pursuit of her. The trees took a moment and seemed to close in around her, creating a dizzying feeling for Jane. But she continued on. The trees seemed to grasp at her, the branches becoming hands and fingers gripping at her and trying to stop her from escape. She fought through the trees, her breathing becoming shallow, and her sight becoming dim. In her lowest moment, she could see a clearing, a ways in front of her, giving herself the last push to get there, breaking free of the branches which held her and making it to the clearing. Jane couldn't help but notice that the biker was a rugged-looking man who was holding onto his ankle, wincing in pain.
Are you okay?
Oh, as well as anyone who just fell from a bike.
I'm so sorry. I thought I was alone up here.
As did I.
The man eyed her up and down, taking notice of who she was for the first time.
Do you live near here?
Yes. I think you hurt yourself.
I'm fine.
No, here, let me see.
She reached over to gingerly touch his ankle. As she touched his skin, they shared a gaze and...
Oh!
I think it's sprained.
Oh, yeah, great deduction skills.
Jane couldn't help but smile at his attitude.
I can help you get back to your car.
Oh, I'm quite capable, thanks.
He tried to stand again, but struggled to get up. Jane helped him to his feet.
I'm not letting you walk to your car alone.
The man took in Jane, her eagerness to help him, and couldn't resist his curiosity about her.
If you insist. What were you doing out here, on a run?
Yeah, you could say that.
Yeah, it is beautiful up here.
Great place to hide from your demons.
Instead, you cause havoc for others.
Well, how often do you run people over?
What? You came out of nowhere! Let me guess. Your name is Ashley.
You can call me Ashley if you want.
All right. What do you do, Ashley? Phlebotomist? Dentist?
You think I'm a sadist?
I'm only guessing.
I'm a nanny, actually.
At the reveal of this information, something came over the mysterious biker. Jane continued to only focus on the trail.
How long have you been doing that?
Not long. I actually just started a few weeks ago.
I think I can take it from here.
He roughly took the bike from Jane.
But your ankle!
No, it doesn't hurt that badly.
As he mounted the bike and disappeared into the distance, Jane couldn't help but be baffled by what had just happened. When Jane approached the house again, she noticed Pilot sitting by the front door waiting upon her arrival home.
There you are. Oh, I'm so happy you're okay. What a good girl to find your way home all by yourself. You're such a good girl.
When she looked up, there was a man standing in the doorway. Jane nearly jumped out of her skin at the sight of him. It took her a moment to realize it was the biker from before, now dressed in an expensive-looking suit and looking at her with disdain on his face.
Come inside, Miss Eyre. I want to meet you in my office.
Jane entered the office and sat in a chair facing the man. She sat her bag on the chair next to her, where her sketchbook poked out from the top.
So I'm guessing that you're Mr. Rochester?
That would be correct.
How's your ankle?
I'm feeling better now.
I can go grab you a bag of ice.
I can take care of myself.
I'm sorry,
I need to set some ground rules with you.
Okay.
You are only here on a trial basis. I need to make sure that you're a good fit. You have 30 days to prove that to me.
Okay.
If you pass the 30 days, then I expect you to stay. This is a long-term engagement. If you're looking for something short-term, like only for a few months, then put in your 2 weeks now.
I'm planning to stay for the foreseeable future.
If you pass the 30 days.
Right.
I have a 3-strikes-you're-out policy, and I can fire you at any time at my own leisure.
Okay.
How old are you, Miss Eyre?
I'm 20.
I can't have you just having boys over while you're attending Adele. I need someone responsible.
I don't have a boyfriend, if that's what you're asking.
You can't have the holidays off to go see your family. I'm sorry, but that's the time I need someone here most to look after Adele.
I don't have anywhere to be during the holidays.
Then you can remain here with Adele.
Yes.
I work from home often and cannot be disrupted during these times. Please, keep yourself and Adele away from my office, as I may be on an important call.
I can do that.
Okay. If that's all understood, then you're dismissed.
Jane hurried to pick up her sketchbook from off the ground, but before she could, Mr. Rochester had grabbed it.
Ah, I see. You're an artist.
Jane froze at the page he had opened to. It was a sketch of a door, black and covered in shadow. Without much thought, Mr. Rochester turned the page to one of a woman, and Jane felt relief.
May I have that back?
Oh, this piece is contrived and the composition is basic at best. Are you trying to copy Emma Hart as Circe?
I was trying to.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Miss Eyre?
Yes?
Close the door on your way out.
Jane exited the room, closing the door behind her, and couldn't help but think about what she was going to do now that she'd met Mr. Rochester. Jane couldn't stop thinking about it. Even hours later, as she sat, waiting to pick Addie up from school, the bell hadn't rung yet, so the kids didn't litter the schoolyard. Jane let curiosity fill and bubble over until she pulled out her phone to Google Edward Rochester. A few search results filled up the screen. Many were articles. The top one read, 40 under 40, Edward Rochester. He was someone important, Jane could tell. The next article was titled, Preserving the Rochester Gallery Legacy. Edward Rochester carries the torch with a fresh eye and continues to revitalize energy to the art world. Under the video tab, Jane only found more. The first was of her employer standing on a stage, a large projection behind him. She clicked the link. Mr. Rochester stood in front of a crowd, standing confident in a well-tailored maroon suit. The slide behind him showed a famous painting that was familiar to Jane, but she wasn't sure of the name.
This is one of my favorite pieces. On the outset, it appears that it was simply painted as all other paintings are. But when you look at it more in depth, oh, you discover so much more. This is the Night Watch, and it stands in the Rijksmuseum in Amsterdam at over 14 feet long and 12 feet high.
The slide switched to show where the painting hung in a museum. It was gigantic, covering a whole wall. Patrons of the museum looked up at it towering over them.
The size of this painting is something everyone knows. It's famous for how monstrously huge it is. What instead amazes me in this piece is the use of the color red. In Rembrandt's time, he couldn't simply go and buy red paint. Instead, it had to be ground by hand from a rock and mixed with the oil to be the color that stands before you. There was so much thought that went into even what color of red it would be, and much physical labor to get that into a painting of this size. The master had to be precise in his brushstrokes. Every one mattered in this giant canvas because he couldn't afford to mess up. Emotion comes through on each stroke of their faces. A whole person comes out of a puddle of paint. Sometimes it looks like we understand perfectly what something is. Sometimes it looks like what stands before us is only a puddle of paint. But before our eyes, it transforms into something new. A whole new life. Every time I look, I see something new.
The scent shivers down Jane's spine. He really knew what he was talking about.
Hey, Bug!
When Jane and Addie reached the Rochester estate, Addie immediately noticed her dad's car parked in the driveway.
Daddy's home!
Addie, wait!
When Addie rushed into his office, Mr. Rochester was on the phone, sitting at his desk. Upon seeing her, a cross look grew on his face.
Daddy!
Adele, out!
But, Daddy!
I'm on a very important phone call.
Oh, my apologies for the interruption.
I can't talk to Daddy.
It's okay, Bug. I think your dad is just having a bad day.
It was about midnight when Jane sat on her bed, her bedside lamp the only light in the room. She read a book, buried deep in it, doing all she could to distract the mire of her thoughts.
Huh?
The house was dark, and Jane walked down the hall, finding herself at the top of the stairs. Before she moved another inch, she spotted, downstairs in the living room, Edward sitting at the piano, only a faint light from the little lamp above his music. Next to him was Briggs, who he was conversing with softly. Neither of them noticed Jane.
She's so young, Briggs. 19. What were you thinking?
I was thinking she was the best candidate for the job, with all of your requirements.
I just think she's too young to do this job properly. She can't be a mum.
You aren't hiring her to replace Celine.
No one is replacing Celine. But Adele needs a mother. 18 is no mother.
You don't even know her. You met her today.
Yeah, she's already broken a window. Let Adele come into my office while I was working. She made me sprain my ankle. And I met her today. She's the worst one yet.
Ooh, you're being dramatic.
Looks like she's an artist. Did you know that? You tried showing a sketchbook to me.
Oh, congratulations. You discovered a common interest.
Yeah, I'll bet she was just trying to get me to put her work in the gallery. She's nowhere near that level.
Stop trying to scare her off. So far, she's doing a great job with Adele.
Oh, I just don't know about this one. I might have to let her go.
You always let them go. They never make it past 3 months, and I'm always the one left to deal with the mess because you run off to who knows where.
You just don't want to deal with hiring someone new.
She's a good one, Ed. Besides, she doesn't have anywhere else to go.
Embarrassment brimmed inside Jane, and she ran back to her room. She entered her bedroom only to find it swarmed with darkness, only the faint moonlight stroking her face. Her breathing became shallow and heavy. Sweat perspired from her head. Her eyes were swollen and began to tear up. Her hand latched to her chest, only to find her heart racing. Jane scoured her room to find her phone, which was charging on the nightstand. Even with her whole body shaking, she managed to dial a number.
Hi, this is Helen. Sorry I missed you. I'll be sure to call you back as soon as I can. Thanks. Bye.
Helen, I think I might lose my job. I finally met Mr. Rochester. He doesn't think I'm good enough. I'm trying my best. Help.
Twelve-year-old Jane clumsily learned her basic skills on the piano. Beside her at the piano was the shaggy-haired, braced-faced 14-year-old St. John, nervously instructing her. Helen sat on a chair next to them, writing in her notebook as she patiently endured Jane's many failed attempts.
Janie, don't have your hands so flat.
Oh, right, sorry.
Nice!
I told you he would be able to help you.
Thank you for helping me, Singe.
Oh, it was nothing.
Singe, play us something!
Whoa. I am not your personal piano slave.
Would you please play something?
Oh, fine. Fine.
Oh, there you are, Jane. I've been looking for you everywhere.
I'm sorry. Am I in trouble?
No, of course not, dear. I just need to speak with you. Mind coming out here with me for a second?
Sure.
I just got off the phone with your aunt. Unfortunately, she informed me that she isn't able to have you back over winter break. I'm so sorry. I know it's no fun being at school over the holidays.
It's all right. I don't mind.
I want you to feel like...
Liars aren't welcome in my home.
Everything okay?
I'm staying here for Christmas.
I'm so sorry. Maybe I could ask my dad if I can stay here for Christmas too.
It's okay, Helen.
Why can't you go home for Christmas? I don't understand.
Helen threw St. John a look to be quiet as she made her way over to Jane to give her a hug. Jane's face was numb, a hollow look in her eyes. No matter how tight Helen squeezed onto her, it didn't eliminate the agony that grappled her.
I don't deserve to be there.
Ugh.
Okay, crepes are ready to be assembled, Bug.
Yes, I want a Nutella and strawberry one.
All right, come on over here and we can do it together.
More, please.
That should be enough. Maybe your dad would like some?
Daddy never eats breakfast.
Well, it wouldn't hurt to at least offer some to him.
Jane made her way out of the kitchen to Edward's office. She had an anxious look on her face. Why would she sign herself up for this? Eventually, she made it to his door. After a moment of thought, she went to knock on the door before suddenly...
Mr. Rochester?
Jane froze. Edward had an angry, grimacing look on his face. A commanding force and energy came out of nowhere. They both looked at one another. Edward's eyes were pools of darkness. Jane was stunned. Edward stormed past her as she moved out of the way quickly. When Jane returned back to the kitchen, she and Addie looked at each other with worry and confusion. Addie got up to check on Edward.
Addie, leave him be right now.
Daddy's never happy when he's home.
Jane noticed Addie's eyes sink down into her crepe, holding in the sadness that illuminated in her eyes. Taking in the crestfallen look of the little girl, it made Jane want to do anything she could to make things better, happier. All she could do was rub Addie's back lovingly, doing all she could to be of comfort in a situation she had no answers or explanation to give. It's going to be okay, I promise. You won't fail. You're going to do amazing. I believe in you. Just trust in yourself. I'll call back later tonight. But until then, you got this, okay? Love you. Au revoir. Quiet tears fell from Jane's eyes as she listened. She needed the strength from her best friend.
I can do this.
In the late hours of the night, Edward returned home, looking just as tired as he had that morning. He stumbled into the kitchen, going immediately to the fridge. Inside, there was a plate covered in plastic and labeled, Mr. Rochester, smiley face. He pulled the plate from the fridge, bewildered at the nanny. Edward entered the kitchen that morning, dressed in a suit and looking put together, but also very tired. The bags under his eyes seemed to have a life of their own. He walked over to where Jane stood, reaching around her to grab the kettle. Instead, she only handed him the mug that she had so carefully put together.
I made you tea.
With that, she walked from the room. Edward watched her as she left, a small glint in his eye. He tried the tea before pouring it in the sink beside him.
Ugh, Americans.
But he couldn't help but smile. A small smile, looking at where Jane had disappeared to. He reached into the cupboard to get his proper ingredients, unable to stop thinking about the nanny. The sun had just begun to set when Jane found herself on the porch swing at the back of the house. Looking out at the view, she cradled her cup of hot cocoa, its warmth flowing through her. Edward stood just behind the back door, watching her. She looked so serene, and he didn't want to interrupt.
May I?
Sure.
Why do you do it?
Do what?
All of those nice things for me. Leaving food for me and the tea. It's not your job to take care of me. It's your job to take care of Adele. Looking after me isn't going to ensure that you keep the job past the first 30 days.
Jane didn't look at him as he waited for her response. He observed her, noticing how defeated she looked.
You really need this job, don't you?
Edward continued observing. Her face remained still, but her eyes gave a variety of emotion.
If you do think I'm not a good fit for this job, please, make sure whoever you hire to replace me stays. Not just for a couple weeks or a few months. Addie needs someone who stays.
At this moment, her eyes made contact with Edward's. No more defeat sat there. She seemed confident in what she was saying, resolute. An emotion overtook Edward, as he couldn't help but break eye contact with her. He stood up suddenly, trying to gain some composure.
I came to tell you that I'm leaving tonight.
What for?
I'm going away to Los Angeles. Who knows how long I'll be gone.
He started back toward the door before stopping for a moment and looking back at Jane, looking as though he wanted to say something. He lingered, but eventually he turned away. Jane looked out at the sunset, unsure if his reaction meant that she was fired. Inside the house, Edward began to frantically pack a bag. Most of his trips had been planned in advance, but this trip was sudden. He had to get out. He packed chaotically, not even realizing what he was packing for or where he was going. He zoomed away from the estate. He stared intensely at the winding road in front of him, guiding him off the mountain. He was going 60 miles per hour, 70, 80. His knuckles were white as he grasped the steering wheel. Every bit of his posture stiff, he pressed hard against the gas pedal. The car's acceleration was a distracting cacophony, welcomed against his mired thoughts. Something dashed from the forest in front of the car. Edward managed to stop just before his car had a chance to hit the deer. The eyes stared back at him, wide. It reminded him a little of Jane, but Jane was different from this deer. His thoughts had become more potent, and he made himself pull the car over to the side of the road. Edward finally released his hands from the steering wheel. He rubbed his temples.
What am I doing?
He looked out ahead to see the great beyond with never-ending road. Something, or someone, stopped him from moving forward. Jane sat under the covers of her bed, reading her copy of The Goldfinch by the light of the lamp beside her bed. It was night now, and Edward had left hours ago.
Jane!
Without hesitation, Jane put the book down and rushed from her room to Addie's.
I'm coming!
When Jane found the girl, she was on her bed, clinging to her stuffed hippo. She was shaking as sobs escaped her.
Bug, what's wrong?
A monster was chasing me.
Jane laid next to Addie on the plush pink comforter, holding her gently and soothing the trembling girl.
It was only a nightmare. I promise you're safe.
How do you know?
Jane looked down, noticing a feather had wrestled its way out of Addie's pillow. She picked it up gently.
Oh my, you see this here?
Jane raised the feather up for Addie to see.
Helen, my best friend, always told me that feathers were messages from our guardian angels. So anywhere we go, no matter where we are, we always are being looked after. And right now, they just left you a little reminder.
Addie looked up at Jane, trying her best to calm down, but tears still streamed from her eyes. Jane tickled Addie's nose gently with the feather before putting it to the side. Jane pulled Addie closer, feeling herself get emotional as well.
No matter what, you aren't alone.
Please don't leave me.
Addie curled in close to Jane. Jane was quiet, feeling pain and tears stream from her eyes. But she tried to quickly calm herself down, to be strong for Addie in the moment. She wished she could reassure Addie that she would stay, but she wasn't certain where her future lay. Jane kissed Addie on the forehead and wiped the tears away from her face.
I don't want to fall back asleep.
You don't have to right now. It's okay.
Addie continued to shake as she held for dear life to Jane. Jane held her back, just as tightly, familiar of the fear that suffocated the vulnerable child, the terror of which causes many restless nights. When Edward arrived back home, he was tired and disheveled. He made his way up the stairs toward his room when he heard a sound. He approached Adele's room, inching closer and pushing the door open a small crack. Jane sat on the bed, singing to Addie, trying to lull her to sleep.
Oh, child, when darkness comes, it's only for a while. Find yourself surrounded with arms so tight.
Hearing Jane sing subdued Edward's weary heart. Something inside him warmed as he saw, through the crack in the door, as Jane was sat up against Addie's headboard, the little girl cradled in her arms, wrapped in a fuzzy purple blanket. Jane was gently caressing Addie's hair back behind her ears. This brought a memory flooding back to Edward. He was 7, and he was being cradled and sung to by his own mother. A warmth filled him at the memory.
When darkness comes, it's only for a while. Find yourself surrounded with arms so tight, holding on to you through the night. Hold on, hold on.
A tear streamed down Edward's face as Jane finished the lullaby. While he ached to go inside, he didn't. He tried to pull himself together, but the emotions only became stronger. Jane began to get up from the bed, and he quickly made his way from the room and down the hall into his bedroom. When Jane arrived home the next day, she made her way to the kitchen.
Mr. Rochester, I thought you left.
He stood in the kitchen, making tea. 2 cups sat before him, and Jane's sketchbook sat wide open on the kitchen counter. He didn't turn to look at her.
Change of plans. Care for a cuppa?
He turned to look at Jane, offering her the cup. She stared at him in shock. A change had gone through him.
Yes, please.
The secret to a good English cuppa is always milk. Milk always goes first if you make tea in a kettle. The flavor holds better.
As Edward finished pouring their tea, he motioned, with a smile, that she should drink. Jane didn't know what to think in that moment. Where was the grumpy guy from before?
Thank you. This is very good.
Edward felt pride in this moment. His royal Britishness was the master of making a superb cuppa. He took a seat next to her on the island, holding on to his mug. His eyes looked down at Jane's sketchbook.
I didn't realize I left it out. I hope you know that I have no ulterior motives. My art is just for me and...
It's a shame. I took a closer look and you do have potential. Your art is very expressive. You emote in your compositions. However, your art is too precious, very contained. It's hindering you.
What do you mean?
I mean that instead of focusing on drawing a single subject, you should be able to be more freeing in your art, especially if you ever wish to showcase it.
I don't know if I ever would do that, though.
Have you ever tried painting on a canvas?
No, I haven't.
You should give it a try. It forces you to open up. Make mistakes. Oh, it's liberating. I have a feeling you would grow in ways you never thought imaginable.
Edward landed on a picture of a door in Jane's sketchbook. He grew silent as he looked deeper into it. He flipped the page to see another drawing of a door and turned his head to look at Jane, who only bore a pained look on her face, and reached out quickly to grab the sketchbook from him, shutting it on the picture.
There isn't much left to see.
As only silence sat between the two for a few moments, an understanding grew between them. Edward was right. Jane did put a lot of her emotion into the sketches. There were some that held so much emotion that they weren't to be seen.
Painting will enable you to express so much that is trapped.
I will have to give it a try. Thank you. I appreciate this a lot.
I'm glad to help a blooming artist.
A lady came into the classroom and talked about art.
Really? That's right up your alley. Did you tell the lady your dad owns an art gallery?
No. She had us paint with our fingers. I drew you a picture.
Edward sat on a couch in the main room, watching the two as they entered with a small smile. He held a gift-wrapped box on his lap.
Good afternoon, ladies.
Afternoon.
Hi.
How was school?
It was good.
Edward held up the box that sat on his lap. He smiled widely.
I have something from your mum.
What is it?
You'll just have to open it and see.
Jane looked at Edward, studying him as he beamed down at the excited little girl.
Wow!
Addie finished opening the gift, brandishing her new tea set excitedly.
Do you like it?
I love it. Now I can have tea just like you.
Your mum has tea too.
And like mommy.
What do we say?
Thank you.
It's from your mum. Why don't you write her a thank you note?
Yeah. Go set up your tea set upstairs and we can write one together.
As Jane began to pick up the shreds of wrapping paper off the ground, she studied Edward. He was looking after where Addie went, pleased with her excitement. As he looked back over to her, she in turn studied the wrapping paper closely.
It's beautiful wrapping paper.
Edward looked at her as she stood up from the floor, the two sharing a gaze. He could tell that she knew the gift wasn't from Addie's mother.
It is a really thoughtful gift, Mr. Rochester. She loves it.
As Jane turned to leave, the man could only blush. Later that evening, Edward sat at his desk in his office, poring over a file in front of him. The name on the paperwork read, Jane Eyre. He gazed at the photocopy of her driver's license, a copy of her resume, and a blank emergency contact paper. Gazing over at the page with no writing, he raised his eyebrows.
Interesting. And her contract? Of course, she has nice penmanship.
He placed this page behind the others. There was a copy of an itinerary from her bus ride into Seattle from Portland, Oregon. When he turned to the next page, he discovered her cover letter and stopped to read the letter at length. He seemed impressed by its words on the page before placing it back with all of the other pages. Jane's driver's license now sat at the front of the pile, her young face staring at him. He looked more closely at it, noticing her birthday, May 12th, 2001. This only made him raise his eyebrows again. It was the next night when Jane went to her room, tired from a long day, when she discovered it. Something that had not had a place in her room before. It was a beautiful easel, just as tall as Jane was, made from a soft and expensive beech wood. She touched the smooth side, noticing that it would never give her a blister. A small white canvas sat on the easel, about 12 inches high. If this were not enough, to the side were an array of different sized canvases and sets of all the types of paints and brushes an artist might desire.
What is this?
Jane could feel nothing but astonishment as she looked at the supplies around her.
Is this a mistake?
This is when she noticed an envelope on the easel, right in the middle of the canvas that sat there. Her name sat on the front of it, written in beautiful calligraphy. She reached out for the envelope, opening it delicately. Inside was a piece of parchment paper. On it, a letter written in perfect penmanship.
You'll never have to celebrate a birthday alone while you're here. Welcome home, Edward Rochester. P.S. I hope you continue your artistic journey. Don't be afraid.
Jane looked at the envelope for a while. When she was finished, she instinctively placed the letter by her heart, a small smile growing on her face.
I'm going to be staying home for a while.
I'm glad to hear that.
Stop. We can't.
Playing hard to get?
No. This can't happen.
What do you mean?
The woman's hand, adorned with sharp, manicured red nails, gently stroked his bare chest.
I'm not finished with you yet.
I mean it. I'm done.
Is that right?
The woman made her way close to him. Her hand reached toward his chest. With one swift, violent motion, the sharp red nail scratched him deep.
You're mine.
Edward looked down to notice the blood coming from the scratch mark on his chest. Without any hesitation, he went for the door, not looking back. After this interaction, Edward felt himself flooded with emotion, anger, humiliation, frustration. Before he knew it, he found himself at a bar. He was going to drink tonight. A lot.
It's okay, Bug.
I just can't.
I know you're scared, but sleepovers are fun. Just cuddle up with Mr. Hippo and it'll be all right.
But what if I can't fall asleep and I just think of the monster?
Here's the deal. If you aren't asleep in a half an hour and you are still scared, then I'll come pick you up, okay?
Okay, promise?
I promise.
I will try to sleep.
Sweet dreams, Bug. Love you. Good night.
As Jane hung up the phone, she found herself alone in the silence and the dark. It became very clear to her how alone she was in the large house.
All right, sober up, buddy. We'll see ya.
When Edward was done drinking, he stumbled out to Briggs' car.
Seriously, Edward?
I had a rough night.
Let's get you home.
When they reached the estate, Briggs helped Edward up into his room and into his bed. He took off the man's shoes and tucked him in.
I don't know what happened to you tonight, but it will be okay. I'll see you later, ma'am.
With that, Briggs left the house. It was dark. Only the lamp on Jane's desk was lit as she sat, a wide-eyed look on her face, as she stared down at her sketchbook. She drew slowly, hands shaking. Jane's subject of the drawing was a door, which she slowly traced and became entranced by. Dark scribbles surrounded it, haunting Jane. All at once, the single light went out. Jane was only illuminated by the moonlight from outside. This pulled Jane from her trance. She looked around the room, eyes wide, becoming aware of her surroundings. Fingernails? Jane refused to move from her chair, pulling the blanket from her lap closely around her. It wasn't Jane's door that opened, but one of the others in the hallway. Jane caught her breath to remain silent. Jane made her way toward the bedroom door. She could smell something. Jane grabbed her phone with urgency, dialing 911 and rushing out of the room. Edward opened his eyes wearily, only to see his bedroom engulfed in flames. Hues of red, orange, and yellow flashed all across the brimstone room. A dark vignette aligned the outer trenches of the room. It felt as though he was being scorched in hell itself. Edward laid on his bed, staying still. He managed to move his hand. He was alive. His eyes scoured the room for an escape route. However, he didn't get up. With flames furthering closer, he made his resolve, remaining still. A look on his face, a broken one, eventually grew emotionless and numb as he looked out into the void. Edward began to close his eyes and drift into a sleep from which he would never awaken.
Rochester, wake up!
Edward opened his eyes. He saw Jane surrounded by flames. Without any hesitation, she made her way toward him. Although struggling in the severity of the flames, she had a brilliant glow about her. While the flames were deathly, her light was inviting and safe. A strength radiated from her. She was a vision. Jane was now at his side. Trying to avoid the flames, she reached out her hand to Edward. Without hesitating, he grabbed her hand, his life being invigorated in him, and got up. The two of them still held on to one another. They began toward the door.
Watch out!
Edward pulled the door shut behind them as they escaped from the house. Jane and Edward both reached the end of the driveway. The adrenaline slowed down, and the both of them turned back to look at the house. The house was still intact. However, they could see a little bit of the fire from the right side of the upper level. Edward looked solemn. As Jane fell to the ground, coughing and holding tightly onto her severely burned left arm, she held back tears. Every bit of her was trying to hide the pain.
Jane!
Edward dropped to the ground and clung on to her. She accepted his embrace, her pain and emotions falling into him, desperately trying to feel comfort through the twinging pain.
You saved me.
Jane looked up at him. He only looked at her in a way she had never seen before. Silent tears started to fall from her tired eyes. There were no words. They were safe. He was safe. Her eyes started to close from weariness. Edward let her fall into his arms as he held tight onto her. He couldn't stop himself from looking at her burned arm, her selfless sacrifice. Nothing preconceived. Every bit of him, from this point on, would never let her go. While death and darkness welcomed him, he was saved. Edward didn't look up. He continued looking down at Jane. How glorious it was to be here, to be alive. He was alive.
I texted you a few pictures of the aftermath of what happened a few nights ago.
The room was black and the furniture still stood, but had obviously been through a fire.
It's insane how quickly fire can spread. I'd say all of this happened in a matter of minutes. I don't know how we got so lucky.
The room was now made of black and ash. Edward and Addie both sat at the piano. Jane noticed them and nursed her bandaged arm as she watched them. She recognized the song.
Look, Jane, Daddy's playing your song.
I'm trying to remember all of it. Would you mind helping me out?
Sure.
Jane stood by the piano where Edward and Addie sat, collaborating with them. The moment was a beautiful one, full of happiness. The three of them felt complete, at home. If they had come out of their moment for even a second, they might have been able to see that out through the window, a dark figure watched them, waiting for a moment to strike.
You've just listened to the first episode of Dear Helen, Love Jane. If you enjoyed this episode and would like to help support the podcast in creating future episodes, please consider supporting us on Patreon at Pilot Edge Studios and sharing this on social media. For future updates on the podcast, you can follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Pilot Edge Studios. Thanks so much for listening.